Welcome to the House of Pod, a show where we pull back the curtain on the world of medicine, we answer questions about your health, and we interview great guests.
I'm Joe, and I'm not a doctor.
And I'm Lizzie.
And I'm Kaveh.
And we're two gastroenterologists.
What's a gastroenterologist?
You know, the doctors who work with your digestive system.
Say what?
You know, your liver, your pancreas, your intestines.
Where now?
Your butt, Joe. It's your butt.
Oh.
On today's show, I'm talking to Lizzie. She's decided to go volunteer in New York City at one of the busiest hospitals in the country dealing with the coronavirus. Stay tuned to hear about how she made her decision and what's happening so far. Well, you went and did it. You did it. You pretty much within the span of 3 days went from, I kind of feel I should go do something to help, to being in New York ready to work at one of the busiest hospitals in the country. What happened?
I did it for the show. I did it for you. No,
it is. It's good radio. I appreciate that. I appreciate you putting yourself in risk for that. That's nice.
Yes. So for our listeners, this is Lizzie. I am in New York. Kaveh's in San Francisco, gearing up to work in the Bay Area hospitals as a hospitalist. But I mean, honestly, for me, I put out feelers and then everything was just a green light. You know, the credentialing happened in like 24 hours. And, you know, I just talked to Tyler, talked to my family. I was like, okay, this is all of a sudden it was just happening, you know? And honestly, you know, my closest friend, Allison, who we had on the show, is a critical care doctor, was saying she was going to go. And then I was wondering, is there any role for a GI doc? Because if you don't know, nobody needs a colonoscopy during the time of COVID. And stool transplants don't save lives for COVID. But I was like, you know, I trained at Bellevue. And everyone, you know, and I am willing to do the job here in San Francisco. So why not try to do it in New York at Bellevue, where I trained for, I was there for over 10 years. I have a lot of affection. I felt like I became who I am.
Yeah.
A lot of loyalty. I became who I am. The relationships that I have today, many of them were founded, you know, on the floors working hard at Bellevue. I feel so rooted in that place. So it was only, I wanted to see if I could. And then when all the barriers started falling, I'm like, well, now I have no way out. So here I am.
So you're there. How was the flight over, the airports, the airplane?
Yeah. So I haven't been to Bellevue yet. I'm going to start tomorrow and get oriented. So I'll update you guys as the week goes on. The airport was amazing. It was silent. I got through in like 5 minutes. There's no lines. I took photos. We posted them of the flight. And I'm pretty sure it was like a 200 plus passenger plane. And I think there was 20 people. So I was telling my little nieces that I have a private jet. So they think I'm super cool right now. So
how were the stewardesses? Were they like, did they, you know, come to like sit with you and talk to you? Were they just leave you alone the whole flight? Did they give you like wine? Were they like, hey, it's just you. What do you want to do? You want to have a flight? You want to come into the, like the flight deck and actually like hold the joysticks and, I don't know what they're called.
I definitely should have gone to the cockpit. That would have been amazing. But it was so quiet that I realized that without other passengers, nobody was coming around. Like there was no like drink service or food service because they're trying to minimize contact. So if I needed something, I could have gotten up. But like I like took a nap. I watched a long movie. Like nobody bothered me. It was awesome.
Did they even bother to go through like the safety stuff?
They did. They did. That was actually interesting. I was wondering like what corners would be cut, but it's pretty well protocolized. So it was pretty cool to see this two rows, like not just one row plane, you know, it was like a big plane, a Boeing like 747 or something. I don't even know the names, but huge and very few people. And it wasn't like a healthcare worker flight. So nobody knew, you know.
Yeah. Did anyone ask? Were people like, because when I'm driving down the street to like to work and I see tons of cars on the road, I want to ask every single person, like, what are you doing? Why are you out?
Oh, now.
Yeah, yeah. Now. Like, what? Yeah. Before, I don't care. Right. Now, did anyone ask you why you were traveling?
No, but one woman I met that we were kind of at the gate, kind of letting each other go, no me, no you, no me, no you. She said she was, she asked the gate check woman, is everyone on this flight a healthcare worker, a volunteer or whatever? And she said, no, but the woman herself is an ICU nurse volunteering. So it's, few and far between. And I did see a lot of people hanging out at the airport without masks, looking pretty nonchalant, which...
Pretty cash, huh? Pretty cash.
Yeah, I was pretty cash. I really do. I'm, like you're saying, I'm so curious to know why people are traveling right now. You know, and then I start thinking of sad things like, oh, someone in their family is dying from COVID or something else, right? Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's something wonderful, like someone just had a baby and it's really important and you have to take these risks to be with your family. But I did see... It was empty, but I still saw more than I would have expected in the airport, if that makes sense, you know?
No, totally, totally. And so you got there and now you're in the hotel in your old city, but I mean, you are now in Times Square. But as a New Yorker, I assume it must pain you deep in your soul to be in a hotel in Times Square.
Right. Totally. It's like, you look out, you know, it's like so bright. It's like daylight out there. It's still, all the lights are on, but there's no one there. I'm like, can't you just shut the lights off? Let's accept the fact that it's like, there's a pandemic and people are dying. It's okay to turn Times Square off. We don't need to maintain that. But yeah, this neighborhood sucks. There's like no bodegas. There's like, not like normal restaurants. It's all like Bubba Gump shrimp and like Chick-fil-A. And like, this isn't like why people come to eat in New York City, is for these chain shithole restaurants.
Man, so every New Yorker.
And most of them are closed.
God, every New Yorker bitches about the Disneyfication of Times Square. Holy crap.
Anyway, I have a question for you, Kaveh.
Yeah.
If you were the head of a hospital in the Bay Area, where we know the corona pandemic is much less rampant at this moment in time, would you let your employees go to New York City to volunteer?
Boy, I got to tell you, that's a really tough call. I mean, if I'm being totally honest, if I was in that position, I probably would not be eager to see it for many reasons. One of which is, you know, puts them at risk. And then there's either the chance that they're no longer able to help us in case of a surge, in case of things get bad here. And then two, you know, they're going to come back and possibly spread it here. Now, if you do all the right things, if you take all the right steps and all the right measures, and if, say, we had testing, like you and I have been talking about for like the last month, you know, this would all be a much easier decision to make. But I think now would be hard. That being said, this is a very strange time in our nation's history, and there's probably no other state right now that I feel more kinship with than New York and what they're going through. And I've talked to you about we talked about this a lot, what they're going through, and how I am very upset about how, even though we're talking about it a lot, I don't think people still quite understand. I don't think people in the country still quite understand how bad it is. I think one day we're going to have movies about it or something, and it's going to blow people's minds, and they're going to see how bad it was and how close maybe it came to being that bad in other places. And hopefully it never gets that bad in other places. But I think it is a special situation. So at the same time, where I'd be really worried and concerned, it would be really hard to keep you from doing this.
Yeah, I agree. You want to protect your patients and your staff. So you would say no. And yet you have to think about the fact that in a month, San Francisco might be where New York is. And you'd love to think that, like, if you go help now, maybe people come help you in the future. There's a concept of, you know, pay it forward. You know, I believe in that, you know, in life. So yeah, times are crazy, right? I sent you a photo of my friend whose face got bashed in and swollen, and everyone's telling her not to go to the emergency room in Brooklyn because of corona, right? Like, otherwise it would have been
a no-brainer. You say, go get a CT scan.
Right. So she got nothing because everyone was like, you should stay away, you know? And maybe we're practicing better medicine for those kind of reasons.
It's an interesting question, actually. It's like, you know, how much it kind of does show you if, you know, hospitals are seeing less non-COVID patients than they normally would see, it does make you wonder how much is really manageable, really, as an outpatient. We'll find totally. Out. Maybe in a month, we're going to have so much awful stuff to deal with because it was pushed aside that we're going to be like, oh, man, no, we're doing the right thing already. But then maybe we're going to have to reevaluate things and be like, oh, maybe we don't need to admit every patient who has X, Y, or Z problem. You know what I mean?
Right.
Maybe they can be manageable. Maybe we don't need that extra test. Maybe we don't need to put that person through that extra imaging study. I think it might, in some ways, it might be good in that way. So yeah, that's a tough question. I mean, I think it says a lot about you for doing this, but also says a lot about the management that they saw the importance of this. I don't think it's something that they could routinely have people do, at least not at this point, not until we're really sure that things are better here. Because I think there is still really a risk in California. I'll be honest with you. We're recording this on Sunday night. Easter night. And even though it looks promising here in California, we're still going to see a lot of cases. The next couple of weeks are still going to be bad. It does look promising that we are able to slow this curve enough to where we won't be overloaded or overwhelmed, our medical system.
Right.
But I'm still very worried about what's going to happen after Easter. I mean, I know some very smart people, and I've known some patients who still were planning on breaking physical distancing because of the special date. And I am a little worried about what that means. I had a patient, very, very cool guy, very smart. At the end of the conversation, we were having about something totally different. He kind of just in passing mentioned that he was going to be having a big family get together on Sunday. It's an older patient with some medical problems. And I told him point blank, I said, I do not do this. Don't do it. Don't do it. And I think
what'd he say?
He knew the right answer. I mean, I think he was like kind of maybe just kind of wanted to hear from someone else. But it did sort of make it clear that people are still going to be exposing themselves to risk. And so we'll see what happens in the next 1 to 2 weeks if we see a little maybe of a blip up because of it. Hopefully not.
Yeah.
Hopefully things are better. Hopefully we're doing well. You know, I just did an Instagram live chat with Rafe DeRozzi. He's that guy we had, the really cool young
He's
guy,
great.
HIV advocate, health sort of advocate, and bodybuilder, et cetera.
So passionate, so articulate, so such a great educator about health and HIV. Oh, yeah.
Definitely follow him if you're not already. And he asked the question, he said, when can things be reopened? And it's a question we're getting a lot. When can things be reopened? And honestly, I mean, I just don't know. I mean, I can't see it happening anytime soon. Like the way things are going, and if other states aren't under control, even if California is, what choice does California have but to stay closed?
Right. Just like you're saying, medicine might change everything. You know, I think all these restaurants who are trying to navigate, negotiate how to do just takeout and delivery, good for them. Be creative, be innovative. You know, like I'm trying to think about like Chinatown restaurants I can order from because of all the stigma that's been kind of associated with the Chinese virus, the coronavirus. Like I want to support these businesses, and the fact that people are updating their websites and getting on these delivery services where this immigrant from China never thought about doing, like it's pushing people to do things that are hopefully good for them in the future in the long run. But we'll see. I will update you guys as the days go. Again, I haven't stepped foot in Bellevue. I'm a little worried because I'm not sure what I can do. As you know, stool transplants, colonoscopies aren't going to be that helpful. I'm determined to be the best damn intern. I'm going to have to do manual disimpactions again. I'm going to have to
First of all, never underestimate how many things a colonoscopy can fix.
So that's a great point. Yeah.
Let's see what happens. And also you're a very fucking smart doctor. So you're going to be good. Don't worry about it. I mean, I'm not expecting you to house MD this shit.
Right.
You know, you're going to be managing stuff that's going to come back to you. CHF, pneumonia. You're going to do a lot of that stuff that's going to come back to you.
Right. And I know I can offer medical care and I might be slower than your average kind of hospital doctor, but I know most importantly what I can provide is like the moral support to these colleagues, even many of whom I haven't met. And I know that will boost them and lift them in the challenge because they're still going to be working here after I leave, you know? And
yeah.
I really appreciate everyone's support. Like, everyone's so kind on social media and through House of Pod. And, you know, I think I would be more terrified again if, like, Allison weren't here somewhere in this building somewhere, you know, like it's a little bit nice to have some like camaraderie and like people, you know, cause I don't want to, I haven't been there in 10 years. Like, I don't know a lot of, I know a few people, but, and I just hope that it's, you know, that I can offer some help. So we will see. I will update you all.
All right. Well, I'm super proud of you. I mean, I'm a little worried. I want you to be extra safe, extra cautious.
10 gloves.
Just step it up a notch in terms of the OCD. Let's just unwrap okay. that inner OCD. But I'm super proud of you. Everyone is. Just please be safe. What you're doing is really important. And I'm gonna be talking to you a lot over the next couple of days. So answer your damn phone when I call to see how things are going. Okay.
Will do. And will
also,
do.
Also, if I'm on the wards too, then I'm going to need, we're going to be like, yeah. What do we do with Lasix again? I forget.
Right. We'll be texting each other the secrets.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Be safe. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Peace. Bye.
The opinions on this podcast are broadcasted for educational and informational purposes only and do not represent the opinions of our employers. These opinions are not intended as a diagnosis, treatment, or as a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult a local physician or other healthcare professional for your specific healthcare and/or medical needs or concerns. All anecdotes and patient-related details have been changed with respect to date, sex, and certain details so that patient identification is not possible.